Greetings and a warm welcome to the Sanlam ESG Barometer Series, where we dive deep into the findings of the 2024 Sanlam ESG Barometer Report. My name is Andile Khumalo, I am your host, and I'm thrilled to be guiding you through yet another compelling discussion on sustainability, ESG performance, and the implications of all of these findings for business and general investment in South Africa and beyond. Today is our episode one, and we are focusing on a very, very interesting topic: hard to abate industries. Now, you might be wondering what these are. These are sectors such as mining, steel, and cement that are notoriously difficult to decarbonize. Given their significant contribution to global emissions, understanding their transition to more sustainable practices is vital to achieving net zero goals. Joining me today is someone very familiar with our series. He's the Chief Sustainability Officer at Sanlam. That's Mr. Abel Sakau. He's going to be giving us some of his insights and expertise that, of course, he's been applying in shaping some conversations around ESG on behalf of the Sanlam Group. We're also joined by Professor Michael Solomon. He is the chairperson of the ESGS Committee at the Southern African Institute of Mining and Metallurgy. He'll be sharing his extensive experience in the mining industry, of course, being one of the key hard-to-abate sectors, certainly here in South Africa. We're going to get straight into it because we did find that in this year's report, there's some interesting data on the performance of these hard-to-abate industries, both locally and abroad, by the way. There are some shifts in investment strategies, there's some regulatory pressures that are coming through, and also challenges that are facing these businesses in how they reach their own environmental targets. So let's get straight into it. And Abel, let me start with you. Thank you again for joining us, as always. Thanks for the partnership. Thanks for making sure that the 2024 Sanlam ESG Barometer happens. But from a broader perspective, right, the report does highlight the increasing pressure that there is on these sectors to reduce their emissions, but it also indicates that progress has been slower compared to other industries. Now, in your view, and I know you got some specific experience with this industry in your previous life, what are the biggest barriers that companies in these sectors face when they try to transition to more sustainable practices?
Yeah, thanks, Andile, and welcome, Prof, and hello. I think it's important to understand the sector in totality from a context perspective.
Yeah.
You know, to bring in a new a mining production takes on average about 15 years. So you can imagine the capital required to start a new mine or even to start a cement factory. And when then the issues of climate change and emissions come into play, the model in terms of, you know, what production equipment is required to facilitate production, and also the cost associated with mining. You know, these are very cost-sensitive operations. And when you then have to change the entire system of production to start integrating low-emitting equipment, you know, for example, we know that there's talks about introducing a hydrogen trucks in for the heavy fleet within the mining sector.
Right.
That comes with a significant cost. So it is important that to understand that it's not going to be a flipping a switch so that you are able to get results.
Right.
You know, mining houses and hard to abate sectors have to start integrating this and making sure that they can shift capital away from their traditional ways of production into new technologies. But some of those technologies don't even exist. You know, we know that there was a test on hydrogen truck, but it's not in production yet.
Yeah.
And when you look at also from, for example, in the cement industry,
yeah,
it's critical that they have to reduce their emission. But it's not easy, you know, the feedstock that they need to use in those kilns, you know,
yep,
it's not something that is readily available. So when we talk about, you know, the broader issues facing these sectors, we must also understand the technological challenges that they face, but also the capital requirement that is required to shift into cleaner technologies, and also the appetite of investors,
yeah,
because investors have already labeled these sectors as sectors that are going to be disrupted.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And then how then do you put capital as an investor into something that you believe in the next coming 30 to 50 years is not going to be there? You know, so those are the challenges that these sectors are facing.
Got you, Prof. Let me bring you in here. Do you agree with Abel's assessment? In fact, maybe more specifically to the South African mining sector, do you think, you know, to what extent is it positioning itself to address these challenges? What are your thoughts?
Look, I mean, I think Abel's hit it on the head in the sense that he's outlined most of the issues around the abatement of emissions. The difficulty is the different operational dimensions of the sector. This is a huge sector. And it depends whether you're open cast, underground, whether you're processing, smelting, refining, whatever. And so it's the different dimensions that provide layers and layers of complexity. And as responsible mining companies like Anglo American, Rio Tinto, and others have set ambitious targets to get to carbon neutrality by 2040. And I've just come back from London from the Responsible Leadership Mining Forum, the Institute, the International Council for Minerals and Metals. And the mining industry per se is committed to decarbonization. The question is, can they really get there by 2040, this very ambitious target, which is 10 years ahead of the 2050 Paris agreements? And whether this is achievable remains to be seen. There are the operational issues that Abel has brought up, but there's also the technical issues. And so if one looks at the way that most mining companies are going, that clean electrification is a substitute for a lot of the carbon generative activities on mining. So one can electrify a lot of mining equipment, stationary and mobile mining equipment, where currently coal or diesel and other forms of fossil fuels and carbon generative fuels are used. The question is, you can't go the whole hog. There are areas that are not that easy to decarbonize, and this is where the challenge actually comes in. You've got to draw the distinction between decarbonization as well and carbon neutrality. We're talking about Paris talks about carbon neutrality, so decarbonization is a dimension where you're using no carbon fuels at all, but otherwise. Things like biomass fuels, where one is effectively recycling carbon, is a different dimension to that. The other aspect is that whether you're talking about direct or scope one carbon emissions or scope two and scope three, mining companies have control over scope one. That's their operational issues, but scope two and scope three are much more difficult because they don't have direct control over these issues. So the question is of one of pragmatism, the other is one of economics, and then Abel also mentioned the question of profitability and cost effectiveness of these modalities. Is that everything is achievable, but are they cost effective? And how committed is the mining company to paying that premium for decarbonization?
And the person that creates that pressure, are they willing to put in the money? Because, you know, a lot of these industries come from commoditized businesses, right? So your revenue line is all about volume because the price is set by the market. So, you know, you're a taker on price. So your real value is how do you manage your cost base? Now, everybody is asking you to decarbonize and be carbon neutral and bring in all these technological advancements. Prof, is the investor, the shareholder, happy to potentially take less returns for a cleaner outcome?
This is where you get it. It's not only the shareholders. Well, you've got to look at there's a disjuncture between the technology exists. You know, technologies will always improve, but the technology effectively exists. The question that Abel mentioned, hydrogen trucks. The fact is that the hydrogen truck won't happen because it's just too expensive. Hydrogen is a really expensive fuel. It's beyond $5 a kilogram at the moment. And to be cost competitive, it's got to get down to $3 or $2 a kilogram, and it's not there yet. It's going to take another 10 years to get there. So technologies exist, but it's a question of what shareholders are prepared to accept. The other aspect of it is corporate culture. Very often, the KPIs of executives in mining companies are not aligned with decarbonization objectives. And this is a problem. There's a cultural issue within the industry that we still have to address, and it's a fundamental issue. Some of the mining companies, I mean, the mining is a long-term business. Decarbonization is a long-term business. An executive salary, an executive contract is 3 years to 5 years. And so unless you can align your LTIPs and your incentive programs, and how do you do this, is probably much more of a problem than the technologies that we're employing.
That's interesting. Maybe some bonuses, Abel, need to be based on decarbonization targets and ESG, hitting ESG targets for a company, and not only profitability. But, you know, the point is STIs and LTIs tend to be linked to performance, and that's often financial, not sustainability.
And it's measurability as well. You can measure tons and ounces. You can't necessarily measure carbon that easily. Abel,
Absolutely. Absolutely. Abel, your thoughts?
I think the culture is changing. In my previous life, as you alluded to, I worked in mining for 17 years.
Yeah.
And the company that I worked with, I know that each and every single individual who works for that organization, whether for me, you know, cleaning staff, security staff, their incentive was tied to meeting the, you know, sustainability objectives. And one of that was reducing our scope 1 and scope 2 emissions. So that culture is starting to creep into mining houses because it's critical, you know, and especially when it comes to issues of scope 2, you know, where I also want to highlight to say, yes, it might be challenging from a, you know, reducing and introducing abatement technology into mining, but we must also give them credit where they are doing positive stuff. You know, more mining houses, especially in South Africa, are integrating renewable energy as part of their energy mix.
Yeah,
you know, and they are taking advantage of you know, the 100 megawatt allocation the president did. So that will go a long way. Because it's not only talking to the issues of mining, but it's also talking to the issues of South Africa energy security, you know. And those are the things that when you look at this hard-to-abate sector, you also have to step back and look at the contribution that they do within the communities that they are located in. And where they're doing good, you should encourage them.
Yes.
You know, more mining houses are actually becoming off-grid for non-essential electricity requirement because they've got linked solar plant associated with their operation.
Got you.
It's critical that we must also understand that that also is part of the transition and it's part of reducing emissions and it benefits the entire country in terms of South Africa.
I'll come back to the prof about the concept of additionality because I do find that a lot of the hard-to-abate industries are almost in this perpetual whip because of their history. And nobody really thinks about the things they can do going forward. I'll come to the prof for that. But quick one, let's just go back to the research, Abel. Back to the Sanlam ESG Barometer 2024. What does the data tell us this year about investments in sustainable technologies across these hard-to-abate sectors? What are the numbers saying? Are we seeing any shifts?
We're seeing a shift, even though not as quick as we want the shift to happen. For example, you know, within this sector, you look at, you know, they look at new technologies as an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, in South Africa, you talk about 47% respondents say they see it as an opportunity to transition and to reduce emissions. And in Kenya, it's about 40%. So it's not like they're not aware of the issues of the role of technology plays, but it's critical that we must also understand that it cannot be a quick fix, you know, like this, the investment that these companies put into their operation, it's, you know, it takes longer. So, and even in the case study with Bamburi Cement, you know, which is critical, you know, to say they started playing with, you know, a 3D printing of houses to see if is that an opportunity in terms of the downstream use of their material, and they found that it reduces emissions in terms of carbon emission. So those are the issues that, you know, this sector has from an innovation perspective.
Yes.
They have to start integrating some of those things and also start looking from an upstream perspective in terms of production, also, but also from a downstream perspective in terms of the use of their material.
Right.
You know, otherwise, for example, if the coal sector in South Africa start introducing these technologies at speed, guess what's going to happen? Electricity prices going to go up because Eskom then has to take the cost and pass that cost to consumers. And who are the consumers? It's us.
It's you and I. We don't want that at all. Absolutely. Prof, let me give you the parting shot here. You are a credible voice in the industry. The institute that you represent is as well, particularly in this sector, which has been branded as hard to abate. like I mentioned earlier, it tends to be sectors that become the whipping boys when it comes to ESG emissions, et cetera, et cetera. But we should be looking forward, and the barometer is all about additionality, not so much kind of a historic view, but more of a futuristic view.
Really, to defend the mining industry, they are the responsible mining companies are committed to decarbonization. They're doing everything in their power, including your direct interventions, sort of offsetting and insetting to actually do this. It is constrained by economics. It's not constrained necessarily by technology. It's a question of time, commitment, and affordability. So I think that the mining companies really, on the whole, are prepared for the challenge and are committing themselves to that. Let's just see how it pans out before 2040.
And Prof, linked to that, what should be the investment community's response to the current situation and going forward for the mining industry? Because we often see a lot of shareholder activism happening around mining companies, results times. I've seen some things happen around some AGMs of some companies. And it seems that the investment community is almost impatient with the changes that ought to be made. What are your thoughts?
They're impatient with the changes that need to be made, but they're all impatient. They're also impatient about profits when mining companies don't produce the profits. If one has looked at the platinum industry, which is one of the industries that was going to contribute towards carbon abatement, 10 years ago, platinum defied gravity. Today, platinum's in the doldrums because of electrification. And so also you've got to look at the waning fortunes of commodities like platinum and the rising fortunes of the critical minerals. And so, it gets back to what shareholders really want. And unfortunately, fund managers, which make up the majority of shareholders, are measured on their short term, on their quarterly profits. So like the executive, this is about commitment and one's KPIs, yeah, and earning potential. And this is something that we've got to go. I just want to make one more point, is that that abatement doesn't always mean higher costs. I've done an exercise. Yes. I've looked at 19 different mining operations. And actually, if you take the diversified energy mix and you substitute it, some of them are higher. Some of the costs, like hydrogen, are higher, but electricity brings down the cost. So overall, the cost of energy on mining companies tends to lower with substitution of clean minerals, not graze. And so that's a positive point to leave this conversation.
Good man. Thank you so much, Prof. Solomon. Thanks, Abel. Thank you guys for joining us today. I think this discussion is crucial in understanding the road ahead for hard-to-abate industries. It's also clear that while the challenges are significant, the opportunities for innovation and sustainable growth are equally profound. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for episode 1 of this Sanlam ESG Barometer Series 2024. Make sure you join us next time for episode 2, where we will be discussing accounting for sustainability. What is it and why do we need it? See you next time.